Welcome to your Lot and Parcel podcast. Our mission is to emphasize the importance of preserving historic landmarks for future generations, mental health, physical well-being, and a safe family home environment. We value your monetary support. Here's your host, Benjamin F. Diaz.
My guest says that few Americans know about the United States Vaccine Court, yet it may be their only recourse if they suffer an adverse vaccine reaction. We're discussing how the vaccine court works and how it does not work, and he speaks to them. He is the author of two books, The Vaccine Court and The Vaccine Court 2.0. He is also the host of the popular podcast, The Right on Point Podcast, where he discusses legal matters such as your civil rights. Let's welcome him to our show now, and here he is, Wayne Rode. Thank you, Wayne, for coming on your Lot and Parcel show, and I really appreciate you being with me today. What you have to say, I think, it's a very important topic. Myself, I'm not too familiar with the program, and I'm sure many of my audience are not either. But please, Wayne, tell us how you became an expert on this program that we'll be talking about, the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. My gosh, that's a mouthful. So talk to us a little bit there, Wayne.
Well, first off, thank you for allowing me to come on to your program and talk to your listeners. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
Our federal government loves acronyms. So yeah, the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, otherwise known as the NVICP, and the nickname is the Vaccine Court, is a kind of an interesting process. It's a judicial process located in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. It's actually not an actual court. It's a process where you can be represented by an attorney, the government. You're actually suing the government for injuries as the result of childhood vaccines or vaccines that have been approved for pregnant mothers, the traditional vaccines, you know, DTaP, MMR, flu vaccines, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And the government is the Secretary of HHS, and they're represented by Department of Justice Civil Torts Division attorneys. Mm-hmm. And they kind of get together and start negotiating. And hopefully people who have been injured will receive some type of fair and equitable compensation from whatever injury it is, such as a flu shot causing Guillain-Barré syndrome, kind of like the modern day polio, MMR maybe causing seizures, or DTaP causing seizures in a young child, be fairly compensated. That was the intent of Congress when it passed it back in 1986. Gee. It's a far cry from that now. It's very adversarial, very contentious, and very difficult for children to receive compensation. It's more about adults getting compensation from the flu shot injuries. Mm. And that's where we are today.
Gotcha. So if it's not a court, it's very much like an arbitration arrangement, correct?
Yes, but you do have appeals up through the federal court system.
Okay.
It is housed within the U.S. Federal Court of Claims, mm-hmm. which is a big red brick building, kitty corner, actually, you know, not too far away from the White House. It's a big red building there on one side of Lafayette Park. And you can appeal a decision there. Then you can appeal up to what we call the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals, and then to the Supreme Court. So it's, there's a four-level judicial process for the NVICP, which is processes injuries from what we call the traditional childhood vaccines and the adult flu shot and Tdap booster and et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that's the basis there. Yes, it's not really a administrative process. It's more of it's a judicial process, but it's a mediation, if you will, as you said.
Yeah.
Parties get together, they provide medical records, and then there could be medical testimony by medical experts on both sides, and then a determination is made whether or not to compensate, and then how much to compensate for.
Mm-hmm. It would seem to me that it would probably be a hard road to hold to verify injury. Is that fair to say?
Well, it can be difficult because modern medicine doctors don't like to equivalent the child getting DTaP vaccine and then 2 days later developing seizures. Excuse me. And so you have to have medical experts to get in there. The government does concede certain types of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And anaphylactic shock, which is an allergic reaction, can occur within just minutes of receiving the vaccine to up to 4 hours. If you do have that issue, then you're eligible for compensation.
Mm.
But to say that you had an allergic reaction the next day is going to be very difficult to prove, and you would need to have medical experts testify in your behalf to say, yes, it can happen. And you got to prove in preponderance of evidence that it did versus the government trying to prove that it was something else.
It's interesting. I can see where doctors might be a little reluctant because of liability possibly as well. Have you found that to be the case?
Well, they're not liable.
They're not liable. Okay.
No, the pharmaceutical industry has almost complete immunity. And what we call doctors, or what, you know, traditionally covered persons, those who administer the vaccines.
Right, by extension.
They have certain immunity other than, there is situations for fraud. There could be negligence, but negligence is a difficult burden. And it's not from the injury, it's from the actions of the provider.
Mm-hmm.
But a doctor is not liable if he gives a vaccine in good faith to a child, and that child dies the next day. The doctor is not liable for that.
Mm.
The state has to then show that the death did cause it by the vaccine, and, you know, like SIDS or something like this, and then you can be eligible for compensation. But that's a difficult burden to overcome.
I understand. Now, you had indicated that it had its inception in 1986, but from what I gather, it's been diluted, the process.
Well, it was signed into law in 1986 by President Ronald Reagan.
Uh-huh.
And it commenced operations October 1 of 1988. And for the first few years, it was a fair and equitable system. Mainly dealing with children who have been injured, who have died as a result of the DPT vaccine, seizures or death, or severe, what we call brain injury or encephalopathy, were the common injuries. And then it kind of changed, and politics got into it, and policy instead of science drove the program in the mid-90s, and it became more litigious. And they removed what we call residual seizure disorder in 1995. And they also then rewrote a more restrictive definition of brain injury or encephalopathy in that same time period. So it became very difficult for children to succeed in this program without the need of medical experts and medical testimony and hearings. So therefore, you know, it would take 1 to 2 years. Now it would take 5 to 7 to 10 years to litigate these petitions. And, you know, the delay, the children are still suffering. Someone had to provide care for them. And then a lot of times there was ways to dismiss these cases, even though it was very obvious that, you know, the child received the vaccine and, you know, 12 hours later developed seizures. Well, they can say, well, he had some type of a gene mutation that might have led to that. It's just whatever the government could use to try to get out of providing compensation.
Mm-hmm. So the liability there is liability protection afforded to these vaccine companies or manufacturers, correct? So the government shoulders the responsibility of what happens. Am I understanding you correctly then?
That's correct. When President Reagan signed it, he had his reservations about it, if you will. Okay. And it just, he was very concerned that, wait a minute, we don't want the executive branch, meaning HHS, mm-hmm. to be part of this. He wanted it to remain in the court system. But the program was set up with you have Department of HHS, you have DOJ attorneys, and then you have the federal court system as the three different parts of the government. There's a trust fund that's set up. Now, the trust fund is funded by sales of pharmaceutical vaccines in the United States. And it's paid out about $4.9 billion since its inception. And it does hold about $4.2 billion in its coffers or its trust right now to pay for compensation.
Sure.
And so they pay it out. The pharmaceutical industry doesn't have to shoulder any burden, cost burden, or legality burden. They're immune from this other than fraud statute. If they committed fraud in their clinical trials or something like that, when they applied for a license to be approved as a vaccine, that would be the only liability they have. But once again, that's not going to benefit the individual. That's going to be a law firm filing a class action suit against it to prove, you know, fraud or whatever. That could take, you know, 10, 15 years, and it might not even, you know, come to fruition.
It would seem to me whoever has the deeper pockets, right?
Basically.
How long it's going to take.
Yeah.
Are there manufacturers, vaccine manufacturers that are not licensed and participating in this country with their vaccines that you know of?
Well, the vaccines that are approved for the, under the program have to have what we call a full biologic approval process, a BLA status.
Gotcha. All right.
Today, you hear a lot about what they call emergency use authorization, EUA status for the COVID vaccines. Those are not covered under the MBICP. There is a couple vaccines that are commonly used in adults that are not covered in this program. One's for shingles and one lesser-known pneumonia vaccine. There's two other pneumonia vaccines that are covered. One of the critical criteria for being in the program, it has to have routine administration to children or pregnant mothers. And those two, the shingles vaccine is not approved for children nor pregnant mothers. And the other pneumonia vaccine that's barely used in the United States is not approved for use of children. So it's not included. Those are administered to people. And if you do have injuries, you could sue the manufacturer.
Oh.
That's a difficult process, but it's still available.
That's interesting. So there is a table of what they will cover or not. Is that out? You'll find that on their website?
Right. If you go out to HRSA.gov vaccine injury, you will find what they call a table of injuries and covered vaccines, the vaccine types, and then also the injuries, and then the timing. It has to occur within this time parameters.
So there's a statute of limitation is what you're saying then.
Well, the statute of limitations deals with more like filing. When you file, and this is what happened to myself. And that is that, and for a case of injury, you have 3 years from the onset of symptoms, first onset of symptoms, to file. In the case of death, you have 2 years. Okay. When my son, who is now going to be 25 at the end of this month, he was injured along with his twin brother. We both took him in, but Nick was injured at the age of 13 months from the MMR vaccine. Suffered a severe reaction from it. Later we figured it out, it was an encephalopathy, And then he slowly regressed and lost his speech and ability to play with his brother and some other social skills. But by the time we figured it out that it was a vaccine injury, our pediatricians ignored us. Doctors ignored us. By the time we figured it out, we sent our medical records up to an experienced vaccine injury attorney. He said, you got a great case here, except for one thing, and that's the statute of limitations. You have 3 years, 9 months. You're 9 months too late.
Mm.
So we're time barred from forwarding on a petition for compensation. That's what started my interest in this whole program. I said, what the heck is this? Back, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, even 10 years ago, no one knew of this, the existence of this program. It's never, Congress mandated the Secretary of HHS in the beginning to publicize this program.
Hmm.
There's not been one Secretary of HHS since October of 88 that's actually come out and publicly created a public awareness campaign for this program.
Interesting.
You have officials within HHS and HRSA that said, well, if we go and publicize this event, this program, mm-hmm. people will not vaccinate themselves. So now that tells me right there, the government and this program is set up to promote and protect the vaccine program instead of protecting and helping those who have been injured from a vaccine.
Right,
right. So okay. It's there to support and protect the vaccine manufacturers and this program, not for the people who have been injured.
You are listening to Your Lot and Parcel podcast. We invite you to tell a friend and to leave a rating and your commentary. We thank you in advance.
We are spending time with a researcher and author. He is the author of two books, The Vaccine Court and The Vaccine Court 2.0. His books, incidentally, were written with compassion and based on extensive research. It is a must-read for those concerned about the intended and the unintended consequences of U.S. vaccines. And you will find more information on this topic in the link found in the show notes. Let's get back with Wayne Rode. Exactly. That's the inference that I get as well. Mm-hmm. How did you hear about this program to begin with, Wayne?
Well, my wife, we were at the time trying to just dealing with, the struggles of trying to provide medical care for our son, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
And she just started doing some research. I was dealing with the fallouts of, he later had a diagnosis of what we call severe regressive autism.
Mm.
And if anybody tells you that vaccines don't cause autism, they're not being truthful, or they don't know the actual facts, because it does cause autism in certain kids. Don't know why, but yeah. It does.
Have you had doctors to corroborate that?
We've had doctors to corroborate that,
okay.
But most of the pediatricians say no to that because they don't want kids to go unvaccinated.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now, while I was dealing with trying to figure out how to pay for Nick's medical treatments, my wife was researching, could this be a vaccine injury, or is there something else there? Why was Nick injured, and why was his twin brother, Austin, not injured?
Mm-hmm.
She started looking into genetics, couldn't find anything there. And then she came across the National Vaccine Information Center.org, NVIC.org, founded by Barbara Lo Fisher, who was one of the three sets of parents that was part of the grassroots advocacy to help pass the law back in 1986. She started back in 1982 working with Congress to try to form legislation. Mm-hmm. But her group, MVIC.org, had a little bit about vaccine injury, and they had a list of attorneys. And that's when she then contacted an attorney and said, yes, send us all your medical records. We sent up three banker's boxes. You know what, you know, the big banker's boxes?
Yeah, yes, yes. Uh-huh.
We sent up three copies of three banker's boxes of all the documents and medical records. They took a week to look through it, and they said, you got a great case, except for statute of limitations.
Right.
And so I've always had this thing in the back of my mind, wait a minute, you know, and this is like, what, 2004, mm-hmm. Where statute of limitations out. So I had to deal with autism and paying for the medical bills and all this.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kept churning and eating on me and eating on me. And then so by 2010, we moved from Oklahoma to Minnesota. And with that, I just said, okay, I'm going to start writing books because we got to put this there. And I got the encouragement of a couple attorneys that practice in this area and some other people. And they said, yes. So I started out my project of writing a book. What I did was I interviewed over 285 families who had vaccine injured petitions in the process, not just autism, but parents who where their child received the hepatitis B shot and died the next day. We had Gardasil injuries. We had all sorts of things. What we call the IPV, which is the modern day polio vaccine injuries. Who knows? DTaP causing seizure injuries. So I started talking with them. And I started formulating, I wanted to write a book about the parents' experiences. And that's what I did, along with some backgrounds of the program. Released the first book in 2014 and published with Skyhorse Publishing out of New York City. And a couple years ago, my publisher reached out to me again and said, we would like to release a new version of that. I said, fine, I'll start writing. What I did is I took the old book, broke it down, and then added a tremendous amount of new material on Gardasil and on SIDS and on why the program is no longer about children. It's all about adults and reform measures and a few other things. And I released it in June of last year, and it's called Vaccine Court 2.0. And from there, now I'm writing my third book, but it's going to be a little different. That's going to be on vaccine injury compensation programs from around the world. So I'm interviewing people and attorneys and officials from many different countries and trying to put together and compile more of a reference book, if you will, of what it's like to for people to file for an injury in the country of Hungary or Japan or China or Australia or Canada or Mexico, South Africa, Kenya, you know, Great Britain, that type of deal.
Yeah.
That's a challenge because there's, I've been, one of the things that I find about this is that I'm doing a lot of interviews at 3 o'clock in the morning because I'm trying to reach somebody over in, you know, Eastern Europe, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge, but it's good. You know, it's difficult because I have to interpret things a little bit different. The processes, the legal systems, the compensation programs, their healthcare systems. But hopefully I can get it done and then get it out sometime next year.
Now you mentioned the Eastern Europe. Do they have a similar program or how does that work? How do they come into the picture? I'm just curious.
Well, a lot of countries over there, like the European Union, they kind of share a certain common process. And that is more or less you submit your claims to an agency within the government, a medical agency, and then they have to look at it and they can decide review to is approve and say, yes, you can then proceed inside their legal system or no, this case, you don't have any standing, so you're going to be dismissed, and then you got to take your chances. So it's a difficult legal process in most of the European countries. What I do find differently, though, is in the United States, when we award compensation, we award for pain and suffering. That's the vast majority of the dollar amount, because you're going to get probably a damage award for unreimbursed medical expenses, and then you're going to get pain and suffering.
Right.
We also might award for what we call lost wages or future wages. In a lot of other countries, they don't allow that. They give you a stipend, or say we're going to give you a check for equivalent to $20,000,
and that's it.
But then you have access to their government-run healthcare system for the rest of your life.
I see.
So the United States has got a bad program, but it's not better. It's possibly worse in many of these other countries. And that's kind of been by design. You know, the pharmaceutical industry is very strong in some other countries, and it's difficult.
Oh yeah. Well, they have a very strong lobby, how they go about in lobbying for their own benefit. So punitive damages can be had in this country, obviously. What's your take and your observation in all your research and so forth with the COVID-19 vaccine? What's your observation today on that?
Well, the COVID vaccine, the injectable, the jab, whatever, is actually classified differently by our federal government. It's called a countermeasure. And it falls under what we call the PREP Act. So any litigation or process for seeking compensation is not done through the MVICP. It's done through the PREP Act and what we call the Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program.
Mm-hmm.
That is a true administrative process. You do not have judicial appeal rights. You can't appeal to a federal court and then up to a judge and et cetera, et cetera. You also have some other problems. The statute of limitations is only 1 year from the date of the administration. Now, it's not only just this the COVID jab, it's also medical devices and antiviral drugs used in the effort to combat the COVID virus. Mm-hmm. So if you were come into a hospital and put on a ventilator and were given remdesivir, you would probably, in my opinion, you probably die within 3 to 4 days. Was just the protocol, what happened.
Yes.
But your estate would be able to file a petition seeking a death benefit, and that is probably it. Now, the problem is, the probability of success is less than 8%, and that's based on past historical, the way they processed H1N1 petitions back in 2010. So it's not good. It's not a good process.
No.
It's actually extremely worse than the MVICP. But Ben, here's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of countries have adopted the CICP as a method, is the process to litigate out all the COVID vaccine injuries in other countries. They've adopted as a template. And I hate to say the word, but we're being thrown under the bus. And everyone who has any type of an injury. Now, the issue here is people don't know they've been injured, or a lot of the injuries are going to take a long time to manifest themselves. We've got a lot of people that are now starting to begin the symptoms of severe autoimmune disorders, yet they received a vaccine maybe back in March of 2021.
Yes.
There's going to be problems. We've got a lot of fertility issues that are going to be popping up. We've got a lot of other things, and there's now the possibility, does this type of vaccine stir or what we call latent viruses that are in our bodies
mm-hmm.
and create problems there, or does it even start or reignite the cancer problem? And so we're going to find out within the next probably 5 to 10 years. I truly believe this is nothing but a damaging, except for elderly people or have medical conditions. I don't believe that anybody under the age of 40 or 50 should ever receive this vaccine.
I tend to agree with you. As of late, I'm hearing things that they didn't tell us this about the vaccine. You know, new developments, new findings are coming out. And I never did take the vaccine. I did get the COVID in the December of 2020. It was a little tough, but I stay healthy. You know, I didn't go to the hospital and all that, but I recovered very well on that. And went to the doctor, got my results here a couple of days ago. They didn't notice that I did receive the COVID, and I do have an immune system that's strong enough to keep it at bay, you know. And so
good for you. Good for you.
I'm good with that. The immune system.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's one thing during all this 2.5 years, Wayne, I heard a lot about taking the vaccine, but nothing about strengthening your immune system. You see?
Well,
go ahead.
We should all do that. This is the key is that the protocol.
Yes.
That was put out by the public health service and the system and doctors and was the only way to prevent COVID is to get the vaccine. Well, we know that wasn't true.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. But we know there's a lot of brave doctors, you know, Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Robert Malone, Ryan Cole, Dr. Pierre Corey, the list is long, talking about what we could do to save so many people. And that was to give them what we call preventive medicines, a protocol of a multi-drug therapies, either early treatment or preventive medicines,
exactly,
to help the immune system beat back COVID, or if you did get COVID, to prevent what they call cell replication.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens. You know, people who had the original strain of virus, all the way through Delta, you probably had the Alpha version, the original.
Exactly.
And you were able to survive. Your immune system is very healthy.
Yes.
Okay. And you should support that. You know, proper diet, proper sleep.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely,
all those things, this immune system that God gave us, our Creator gave us, is a wonderful thing.
Absolutely.
If we would support it, mm-hmm. Then, you know, we have greater success than we do with being dependent on short-term waning vaccine immunity, which is causing. I had the privilege of interviewing Gert van de Bosch mm-hmm. earlier this year, back in early April.
Mm-hmm.
And I posed the question to him. And that is that those who have been vaccinated with what we call the spike vaccine, which is the version that was released up until this past summer,
mm-hmm.
Meaning it was going after the spike protein. Are they going to be targets for the variants? Because I noticed a lot of people who got the vaccine were now going into the hospital and being hospitalized. Stories on that. He said, mm-hmm. His theory, but he thinks he's very confident, was that those who got the original vaccines and boosters are going to turn into magnets for the variants.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That shocked me.
Yeah.
But that's kind of where I was thinking. But when you have world-renowned scientists and researchers starting to look that way, that tells me something. Because now I'm seeing a lot of issues with people who are been vaccinated or boosted, and then they're saying, "Oh, Mama, I got COVID again for the third time." So it doesn't make sense. Okay. Whereas you had the COVID infection. I had the COVID infection back in August of 21. So a couple days I was kind of going, oh God, I just don't feel so good. But my system, I was able to beat it back. You were able to beat it back.
Sure.
I still need to lose some weight, but I'm trying to do those things and making life changes. And by the way, you look pretty healthy in that picture there of you. So your body supports and can able to defend, even with the variants coming out, should be able to successfully defend off another COVID infection, or just make it a very slight infection, much like a common cold.
Exactly.
or a slight flu.
Sure.
I think that's where we are, but
I think so.
I'm really concerned about those who have been injected and where that's going to head. And my brothers and sister and their children are all vaccinated, and I am so concerned about, you know, their futures.
Yeah.
I'm very nervous because all my nieces and nephews are all in their teens and early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, oh, man.
Yeah.
I hope nothing, you know. But
Yeah, well, we'll just hope and pray things are, you know, it's just amazing. I think a lot of it is and was money driven, if you ask
right.
me, you know. And but, you know, what can you do? The only thing you can do is what you are able to do. My philosophy, Wayne, is food is my vaccine. That's my philosophy. Food is my medicine. You know, so depends what you eat. It's foundational to our well-being is what we ingest. And I believe that wholeheartedly. And so it served me well in a way. I'm in my mid-60s and I'm not having to take any medications or anything at this point. As of recent, my doctor, you know, I feel good about it. And maybe I am boasting. I don't know, but... My doctor said, perfect health. I can't, you know, you have perfect health. You know, my blood pressure, PSA, sugar, cholesterol, everything across the chart.
Yeah. You know, well, so. I've got a couple of vices, and that is that if I ever find out who invented candy corn, I'm going to send out a hitman against them.
Candy corn. That's your weakness right there.
Oh man.
Oh, gosh, yes.
But anyway, I've got a good friend I met back in, and he's become a very good friend of mine. I met him back in 2017. Mm-hmm. He lives in Las Vegas, and I was working on a research project to uncover the CDC campaign and very secret experimental measles campaign back in 1990 and 91 in Los Angeles County.
Mm-hmm.
And I came upon the story and I started digging into it. And his name is Kitty Awadu. He lives in Las Vegas. He's a publisher of maybe 32 books, I think, right now.
Oh, my.
He's got an internet program. He's a good African-American friend of mine. But he always says, you're the white Caucasian and I'm the African-American. I said, yeah, we are, but we're great friends.
There you go.
And we share stories about our families.
Sure.
But he is all about the superfoods.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got me to drinking the tart cherry juice.
Mm.
One cup, you know, one glass a day.
Sure.
And the benefits of that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go there eating kale chips every day. It's just an amazing gentleman.
Yeah.
And we've become good friends. We share a lot of other stories, historic, you know, we're both history fans of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, this is all about food. He says food, the correct food in balance is our best defense against disease and other medical disorders.
Absolutely.
And we need to do it properly. So
absolutely.
I agree with you. You know,
Wow. No, that's the way to go. I mean, But you know, there are so many that are facing what we talked about. You know, what words of encouragement would you tell them when if they're facing a vaccine injury, Wayne?
Well, one is that if it's a traditional vaccine, such as the flu shot,
yes,
Gardasil, MMR, DTaP, polio, things like this, you have success, but you need to act quickly. One, you need to, and it doesn't cost you any money because the attorneys and the medical experts are paid for by the trust fund. You need to contact an experienced attorney in the vaccine compensation program. Now, you can go out to my website and people can email me, and then I'll send you a link to any of a list of over 70 attorneys that are all highly recommended that will help you. And they help you defend your legal rights.
Interesting.
Second, you need to get with your medical doctors and all your specialists and make sure you get an appropriate care for what you, what you're dealing with. Get the diagnosis. You need copies of medical records. And another thing that really tends to bring out more success in seeking compensation if you are indeed injured is start a daily journal, a diary. I woke up, like, especially these COVID patients, I'm telling you, you're seeking medical care, but you also need to record what's happening to you on a daily basis. You know, I woke up and I didn't feel so good, so I laid back down for a couple more hours and then got up and I felt dizzy, lightheaded, or I woke up, I felt great, then I got tired real quickly, or I'm having trouble with, you know, my legs moving correctly, or whatever the injury is, record it and get it down there. You'd be surprised as evidence how far that goes to help you support your case.
I can see that.
And then and then get spiritual help. Because these COVID injuries are starting to create a lot of depression and despair and isolation. That's the worst things that can happen to a person, is being isolated and depressed. Get spiritual help. Make sure you talk to your family and friends. Don't be ashamed. Contact some attorneys if you need to, if it's a flu shot or whatever, and then seek proper medical care.
There you go.
Get yourself better. And proper medical care is not just doctors. It's, as you said, food, your diet, you know, sleep, get proper sleep, things like this.
Exactly.
And help your body recover.
There you go. On your website, give us your website so the my audience can reach out to you and then find the sources. Go ahead.
It's, you get a lot of information about me, my efforts, and my books, and it's out on thevaccinecourt.com. I do a lot of my writing out on my Substack, which is thevaccinecourt /substack.com. And then I do have my own podcast, which is The Right on Point. And I interview attorneys, I interview medical specialists on that, talking about what's happening in our civil rights, your legal rights, dealing with the PREP Act and the COVID pandemic around the world. And that's rightonpoint.online.
There you go. Very good. Appreciate that, Wayne. I think what you had to say was very informative and also encouraging for those that may need a little direction in regard to what we talked about. And Wayne, I want to wish you the best and thank you for coming on your Lot and Parcel show, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate this, this opportunity, and I wish you well, you and your family well.
Thank you for listening. The theme music has been provided by Echo Foxtone. All the opinions expressed in the podcast are opinions only and should not be relied on. We hope you will join us in supporting home and family through your monetary funding. For more information, please visit yourlotandparcel.org.